This land is your land. This land is my land. From California to the New York Island. From the Redwood Forest to the Gulf Stream waters. This land was made for you.
Good evening. This is your host, Rakesh. This week on A People Speak, The People Speak invites audience participation. You can listen in by phone calling 805-399-1000, then entering the access code 769608#, when prompted. Or if you have a smartphone or a computer, you can go to bbsradio.com and navigate to station 2. Click on the listen icon. You can also participate during the show with the call-in questions for our guests, toll-free in the United States and Canada, 1-888-429-5471. And this is the BBS Radio Network with our sound engineer, Don Newsom. Tonight's guest is Abraham Bolden, author of The Echo from Daly Plaza. Abraham worked for the Pinkerton Security Service, then a member of the Illinois State Police when he decided to apply for the Secret Service, working for the Chicago office, then appointed to John F. Kennedy's White House detail. After JFK's assassination, Mr. Bolden had some questions and then began the struggle of his lifetime, being accused of things he didn't do, jailed to keep him quiet. Sir, fill us in on your story. By the way, welcome to the show.
All praise be to God. Thank you very much, Mr. Cash, for inviting me on your show today.
Oh, it's my pleasure, sir. In your book, you struggled. Not one trial, but two trials just to keep you in jail, just to keep you quiet. Can you tell our audience what your experience was?
Yes, that's correct. After having been invited to join the White House Secret Service detail when the president was in Chicago on April 28, 1921, I mean 1961, at McCormick Place, I was on the detail for a short period of time guarding the president. Now, I found it very, very troubling what I found when I went to the White House detail. I found agents who were lax. I found agents who really didn't respect the job that they were doing or respect the president of these United States of America. Now, we had a president at that particular time, President John F. Kennedy. President John F. Kennedy was for a government where the government served the people. Now, since that time, since the Kennedy assassination, we are going down a road where the people are serving the government, which is not what the framers of our Constitution meant. Now, the American people have endured since November 22nd of 1963 a horrible tragedy. And that tragedy was the assassination of a president of the United States of America on Friday, November 22, 1963, in broad daylight, on a motorcade, doing a motorcade route, had his brains blown out into the street. And so we departed from the venture that we were going on towards a unified United States of America, and now we're becoming a divided and used people. Now, what I'm interested in is getting the evidence before the American people. We have researchers. We have people who have spent long hours. As a matter of fact, some of them have dedicated their whole lives to looking into this problem as to who, why, and wherefore was the president assassinated. Now, that is important to the American people because it's a choice that we have to make. Whether or not we want to be members of a government that is going to be changed by a coup d'etat, whether we're going to be changed by the orderly constitution of the American people of the United States. Now, that's a choice that we all have to make, sir. And I'm calling on all rational people to listen to the evidence, listen to the researchers' evidence. We have people who have, as I said before, spent their whole lives in trying to come to some conclusion. Yet, we have yet to get the cooperation from the mass media or the people who should be responsible in reporting and notifying the American people of the extent of the travesty that happened on November 22nd, 1963.
Last week we interviewed James T. Tague, and he seems to believe that it was a rogue government takeover, just like you do, and he also believes that Lyndon B. Johnson was behind it. Who do you think, in your perspective, in your investigations and your research, who do you think is behind the assassination of the president?
Well, actually, sir, let me explain it like this. I am not a researcher. What I have in the Echo from Dealey Plaza, my book, is what I experienced, what I saw, what I heard the agents talk about, what I heard the president say. So I am not a researcher. I deal in facts. I do not deal in opinions whatsoever. I deal in hard evidence, as I had been trained as an Illinois State Policeman, a Pinkerton detective, and also a Secret Service agent. Now, the evidence to me, to a reasonable man, and that's what we have to look at, what would the evidence say according to what a reasonable man would think according to that evidence? Now, we have to look at these facts, sir. Number one, was there a forewarning of what was going to occur in Dallas, Texas in 1963? And if there was a forewarning, who was responsible to prevent that from happening, the assassination from happening? And then why was it not prevented? And what would be the conclusion of a reasonable man if all of the evidence was released from the archives that are being sealed now, the records that have been sealed by Lyndon B. Johnson, and we don't know when they're going to release those records. They should have been released. They should have been released this year. However, I understand that there might be some extension on it. But I have no question in my mind except that the people who assassinated the president were high officials, people who could control the workings and inner workings of our government. Now, whether you want to call it a sub-government, whether you want to call it a bogus government or whatever the name was, it happened because of people who had the power to do things like change the routes of the president's motorcade, the power to remove Secret Service men and have them stand down during the assassination, the power to have President Kennedy at a certain position at a certain time. Now, these things lead me to believe, and I think that they would lead a reasonable man to believe that there was certainly a conspiracy to assassinate President Kennedy. Now, that first question, was there a forewarning? When we take in the evidence, and I'm talking about hard evidence, prior to November the 22nd of 1963, the Secret Service had forewarning during a conversation we had recorded in Miami, Florida, between a man named Miltier and an informant of the sheriff's office down there in Dade County. Now, this man, Miltier, was discussing with our informant as to how the president would be assassinated. And he said that from a tall building with a high-powered rifle. This is exactly what he said. Now, this was in November of 1963. So you can see that when he said from a tall building with a high-powered rifle, that's exactly the way that the president was killed. Now, to go further than that, this Miltier, who was a rightist, who was a Ku Klux Klansman, who had a reputation of being a member of a hate group, this man, Miltier, said that after the assassination, that there would be a patsy who would be set up, who would be arrested immediately after the assassination. Now, what would a reasonable man believe if he knew that? If the American people, who are reasonable people, I believe, if they had known that during that same month that the president was assassinated, there was a discussion as to how he should be assassinated. And that plan, which was being discussed over the telephone, which the Secret Service had a copy of, the tape at that particular time, when the conversation took place, they knew all about it, and yet the president was assassinated in that identical way. What would a reasonable man think? Was there a link between what Miltier said and what happened? Was Oswald in truth a patsy, such as Miltier said, that after the president would be killed, they would set up a patsy? See, things are just too coordinated to believe that one man from the school book depository sat at a window and killed the president of the United States when there were so many other groups who were planning and who had an outline to kill the president in that exact same way.
Well, I agree with you on the common sense part, because just watching the recently released videos in slow motion and everything, I was able to see things that didn't even only go with the higher building, but it also went with other shots fired from different directions, especially the one that took out the president's skull had to come from the ground. There was no way that the bullet was fired from the top and then deflected in the direction that it did. With that being said, do you think that maybe the president has ties with these members of the Ku Klux Klan and or business dealings or something of that nature?
Did the president have ties with them?
Sorry, the vice president.
Oh, the vice president?
Lyndon B. Johnson. I'm not sure
what the vice president had ties with, and I'm not really positive as to his participation, if at all. All I can say is that what I'm telling you today are things that I experienced, what I heard, what I saw with my own two eyes, and what I heard with my own two ears. So this is not hearsay evidence that you're getting. This is evidence that a person could rely upon and come to a reasonable conclusion as to what happened to our president on November the 22nd, 1963.
Okay, so you think that it was these people acting alone without participation from the rogue government, or you're just giving us the evidence of only what you know and just the recordings of those Ku Klux Klan members planning the assassination?
No, I agree that secret government within the government, within the United States government, in my opinion, now this is my opinion, had an active part in planning, executing, and actually carrying out the murder of President John F. Kennedy. Now, I'm not the only one who have that opinion. There is evidence to sustain that conclusion, and the American people should have access to that evidence, be able to evaluate it as a sensible and reasonable people. And that evidence is being sealed, and they are being locked up by some of the same people, and I will say Lyndon Baines Johnson, who might be a suspect in having a part in the assassination. So how can a person who might have had a collaborative part in a murder, and I call it a murder, that's because it was, be also have the power to keep the files locked up that would identify those who were responsible for the assassination of the president? That should never be, and American people should not stand for it. They should all cry out 1 million people in Washington, D.C. for those files to be released immediately. There's no reason now. We're 50 years later. Oswald is dead. And so now, and some of the perpetrators of this, I fear, may be dead now. But there are some who are still alive. I'm still here after the president has been assassinated. So some of those conspirators may very well be assassinated. I mean, be alive now, and they must be brought to justice. The only way that they can be brought to justice is that all of the facts surrounding the Kennedy assassination be known and publicized so that the American people can decide what to do about it, when to do it, and how to carry it out. It must be rectified before the American people can move on and bring peace to this land.
I doubt that they're going to allow that to happen. And you know as well as I do that that secret society behind the government is pretty much in control of everything that's going on these days, and all the cover-ups and articulate maneuvers that are going on behind the backs of the American people. Now, this evidence.
Yes, sir. Well, let me just say this, sir, is that in my opinion, and this is what I sincerely believe, of all of those power sources that you have just named a few minutes ago, none of them can guarantee that they'll be able to wake up and blow their nose in the morning. So to say that they have all of this power is just based upon fear. We have been taught that these people have all of this power and that they can do the welding, they can kill a president and get away with it, and there's no need of standing up against them. But not a one of them can guarantee you that they will make it to leave in the morning. So you understand? That's where I'm coming from, and I believe and trust in the truth.
Well, nobody in this world can know for sure that they will be living the next morning.
No, they can't. And money can't buy life.
Exactly. But money does seem to buy the power that drives this country. And it seems to be, filling the pockets of the politicians and starving the people of the country. And this is not what our Constitution was formed to do. Our Constitution was formed to protect the people from such people.
We are the ones that permit that to happen, you see. Now, there have been wars that have been fought in order to preserve our democracy. It's a question as to whether you and I, people in our generation, whether or not we want to maintain a civilized society for our children, for my children, your children, grandchildren, and for other people's grandchildren. You see what I'm saying? We have to make that sacrifice, whatever it takes. Now, when the United States was being embarrassed and was being overrun and subjected by the British Empire, they had a constitutional convention. We have thinking Americans here in America right now, today. And if the American people got behind them and get the truth out to the American people are smart enough to decide what direction to go. And as I say it, the banking people, the people on Wall Street, does not run this country. This country is run by the people. But when the people abdicate their responsibility, then the sub-governments take over.
Well, you're absolutely correct. But, regardless of what we say, there's just some people out there. You can hit them over the head with a book of knowledge, and yet they'll come back at you and say, oh, you're a conspiracy theorist, because there's other people within their peers that are trained to tell them just that. Oh, no, these people, don't listen to them. They're conspiracy theorists. So the awakening is a little bit more abrupt than we would like it to be. And I think this
well,
is where
we have
we're
to be just as resilient as those who are trying to push this one man, this lone assassin theory. We have to be just as resilient as they are. We have to have that firm resolve that it's going to take over the years to pry these documents out of the hands of the archives, the National Archives, or wherever they have these records hidden out. They have to be released by the American to the American public so that the American public can see for themselves what actually happened to our president. Now, if we can't do that, then we may as well get ready to be people who serve the government. And that's not good for me. I'll fight, I'll die to save, to stay away from that type of situation.
Oh, absolutely. And we're right there behind you, sir. And, of course, we do thank you for your service and your honesty. And if the Secret Service was filled with more people like you today, then I don't think we would be going through these problems. What we need to do is petition to have those records released, and we need to get people running those petitions nationwide and via Internet also. With that being said, I have questions for you from our audience. Of course, it's an interactive radio show. My first question to you is, Mike in Pennsylvania wants to know how you feel about the question regarding the official story of the 9/11, and do you trust the 9/11 Commission's finding?
No, I don't trust the 9/11 Commission's findings. Now, here again is a case where the American people are being hoodwinked, you might as well say. They are being hoodwinked, and things are being told to them in order to bring about a closer, you might say, become closer to a police state. Each and every time that one of those types of incidents happen, we move closer and closer to a police state. We move closer and closer to a society where the people are serving the government. And we have to reverse this. And the only way that we can reverse it is demanding the truth from our government and sticking together and going by the Constitution of the United States of America.
Of course.
I don't believe the 9/11 Commission whatsoever. I think that was an inside job. That's just my own opinion now, because I don't have any factual evidence to support it. But I do believe the scientists and physicists who have been on the Internet, who have been on radio, who have been on TV, that my being a reasonable man causes me to suspect that there was foul play in the 9/11 Commission's findings.
I'm in full concurrence with you, sir, on that. That was my initial instinct from the second I saw the buildings go down. It just didn't make sense. It did not make sense to me, and I questioned it. My next question comes to you from John in Cincinnati, and he says, do you think the same people could be responsible for the deaths of JFK Jr. and RFK?
No, I don't think the same people had JFK Jr. killed. I don't think that the same people had RFK killed. I really don't. I don't have any evidence to suggest that, but Dr. Martin Luther King is another story. I think that the same people that killed our president of the United States also had a hand in assassinating Dr. Martin Luther King.
As a matter of fact, I believe that they tried to pin Mr. Tague as a suspect in that finding. You know, and he was also questioning it at first. Mike in California wants to know, Mr. Baldwin, do you think that the assassination? Well, you answered it. Of course, you understand that the Martin Luther King was also a conspiracy. And that is his question to you.
Yes, right. I think that was a conspiracy. Absolutely, I do. There are just too many things that don't make sense. And when you come across evidence that doesn't make sense, usually there's something wrong with it. It should be further investigated until it's believable by the average reasonable man.
Yeah, and we found out recently from one of our guests that we had on the show that Abraham Lincoln was killed, you know, due to the fact of the money situation and the monetary system and his will to put the monetary system in the hands of the government instead of the private industry.
Yes, and I think that may have been a factor in the death of President Kennedy also. There were many reasons that that certain forces wanted President Kennedy out of the way. The Vietnam War was one. The Cuban crisis was another. The Federal Reserve Bank was another. The racial situation here in America was another. But what the American people must understand is that when one researcher says that the mafia did it, another says the CIA did it, another might come to the conclusion that the White Citizens Council did it. What the people must understand, we're talking about the same people. Those are not different groups. Those people go back and forth and do jobs for one another, such as there was a group, a mafia group, that was supposed to be going into Cuba to assassinate Castro. So we're talking about the same people when we talk about it. But other people who want us to believe that Oswald sat in a window alone, try to make a division between what we're talking about and make us look like we're some kind of kooks. But all in all, these people represent the same idea, and that is a takeover of the American people of the United States and divide us and make us slaves and servants to their monetary and physical properties.
Great. Well, I've got a ton more questions for you when we come back. We have to take a quick break. Once again, this is Rock Cash with our host, Abraham Bolden, on the BBS Radio Network, and our fabulous sound engineer, Don Newsome. We'll be right back.
Got questions? The library has got answers, and books and magazines and CDs and videos and web access and databases and all sorts of other resources at your library. In a world that's information rich, libraries are information smart. Find the right answer and a whole lot more at your library.
With over 150 million registered users, PalTalk is the largest video chat community in the world, with over 300 PalTalk support staff speaking dozens of languages to help you enjoy your online experience. Meet new people across town or country or continent while chatting about your interests. Sing live karaoke, listen to music, join a lively political debate, or play group trivia in one of thousands of chat rooms in various categories from your PC, mobile, or tablet device. Joining PalTalk is free and easy. Go to paltalk.com and become part of our friendly community today.
In America, most of us have the basics we need to survive. But there are millions of children all over the world who don't. Children who must work instead of going to school. Children who were forced to fight as child soldiers. Children who can't have an ordinary childhood because they lack health care, clean water, or good nutrition. For these children, there is UNICEF. UNICEF works in 157 countries and territories, providing children with what they need to survive and grow. To learn more, visit unicefusa.org or call 1-800-4-UNICEF.
Hello, this is Wesley Snipes. And when I'm divinely inspired and spiritually motivated, I listen to BBS
Radio.
In a world of abundance, hunger is a crime. When a malnourished child dies,
We're all guilty. Yet it happens every 5 seconds. Let's do the right thing. Put hunger away for good. Please, give to the World Food Program.
This land is yours.
Join us on The People Speak for an hour of live interviews and audience interaction as guests of various organizations share their work and strategies which impact our world and make a difference. That's The People Speak every Tuesday, 6 to 7 p.m. Pacific, 9 to 10 p.m. Eastern on the BBS Radio Network.
This land was made for you.
Welcome back. This is Rock Cash with my guest, Abraham Bolden. Abraham, sir, welcome back. Can you fill us in on your situation and why you were brought back to Chicago and why you were brought up in front of the Warren Commission and, of course, why you were tried and jailed?
Yes, I can. Now, what happened is this. When we're talking about what happened in Miami, Florida, and the conversation that that Miltier had with one of our informants, the government has denied that the Secret Service knew about it or that that information was transferred to the PRS division, which is the Protective Research Division in Washington, D.C. That's a lie. The Secret Service knew full well that that conversation took place, and they had it documented in a record that we met on Wednesday morning during the week, and that was brought up. The Miltier investigation was brought up. In the meantime, there were assassination talk here in Chicago where Cubans who were members of the DRE, they were talking about the fact that the president was about to be assassinated. All right. Now, we had an informant inside that group also. So what happened is this. After the president was assassinated, the reports that were generated prior to the president's assassination were redated to make it appear as if those investigations took place after the president was assassinated. Now, I had firsthand knowledge of that, and saw the cross-outs and the retyped reports that were being done by one of the secretaries in the Secret Service office here in Chicago. Now, we have absolute proof that those incidences took place. So, but now the Secret Service acted under the umbrella of, you might say, deniability, because they know it was very much criminal for the United States Secret Service not to take precautions against the tall building with a telescopic sight and a high-powered rifle when we knew full well ahead of time that that was going to be the method that was going to be used to assassinate President Kennedy. Now, when I went to Washington, D.C. to reveal what I knew to the Warren Commission, and I tried to contact J. Lee Rankin, who was one of the counsels for the Warren Commission, all of a sudden, the United States Secret Service kidnapped me, you might as well say. They brought me back, forced me back to Chicago, Illinois, where they held me incognito for approximately 17 hours without giving me a chance to get a drink of water or to have anything to eat. This is in the book, The Echo from Dealey Plaza. Now, once that they did that, about midnight on May the 17th, 1964, the special agent in charge, Mr. Martineau, told me to my face that they had decided to charge me with a federal crime. From there, they took me into federal jurisdiction, and I went on trial in July of 1964. Now, just add this up. The very day that I went on trial in July of 1964, the chief of the United States Secret Service was due to give testimony before the Warren Commission. So when the chief of the Secret Service gave his testimony before the Warren Commission, he was able to say, when he was asked, what about the charges made by this agent, that the agents were drinking and that they were lax and that they did not do their jobs? Chief Rowley was able to say, well, that agent has been arrested. That's what he was able to testify to before the Warren Commission. But anyway, I went to trial here in Chicago. As a matter of fact, I had two trials. After the end of the first trial, the jury was deliberating. The judge called the jury out of deliberation and told the jury, in my opinion, the defendant is guilty of all charges in the indictment. Now go back in and deliberate using the words that I just told you. That's what he did. The second trial, because I was not found guilty in the first trial, I had another trial before the same judge who gave his opinion that I was guilty in the first trial. The second trial, the judge, when the jury began to deliberate, he emptied the courtroom of everyone except federal employees. He told me that he was closing down, told my attorney he was closing down the courtroom for the night and that he was going to release the jury and that we would come back and they would have further deliberations on the morning of August the 12th of 1964. But on my way home on the expressway, it was 8 o'clock at night, I heard that the jury had reached a verdict when the jury was supposed to be no longer deliberating. All right, so I knew right then that the verdict was guilty. So now, once that they got me into the penitentiary, and I was in three penitentiaries, including Fort Leavenworth and Leavenworth, Kansas, I knew that the government was going to try to make sure that I never hit my feet never hit the street again. So they put in a plan to have me declared insane. They came to me at 3 o'clock in the morning, and that was on July the 6th. That was 1967. They came to me, took me out of my bunk, and put me in a psychopathic ward, strip ward, psychopathic, forced me to take mind-altering drugs, you understand, in an attempt to drive me insane. But as fate would have it, the person who was to sign the commitment papers for me committed suicide one day before that the committee was supposed to meet. So when the committee met in order to declare me insane, the person, the chief of the classification and parole, committed suicide, so he could not sign the papers. And that's why I'm here today. And that's why I have no fear whatsoever. American people have to stand up. These are critical times. Either we stand up together or we're going to fall together. And we cannot look to anyone else but ourselves. We have to be resilient, and we have to have firm resolve. And if necessary, we have to begin state by state and have ballot referendums in order to have these files released so the American public can see what happened to their president of these United States of America on November 22, 1963. Anything short of that is going to continue the chaos that we're facing all across the world.
Your experience as being a Secret Service personnel and in the penitentiary, did you fear for your life while you were in there? Did you feel that they were still trying to assassinate you also in a different way, or murder you in a different way?
Yes, I felt sincerely that what they were trying to do is reclassify me. And once they reclassify you, they want to remove me from the camp and make me a psychiatric patient. Now, once that could be done, then I would have the time stop. I would not have been doing time anymore. I would have been there for treatment purposes. Now, treatment purposes can be extended beyond the time, your sentence time, which they could say I'm under treatment for the next 20 years. So that way that they would hold me inside the institution saying that I was insane or that I had some mental defect. But as I say, as fate would have it, and no, I didn't have any fear because I have trust and I have belief in the all-powering Creator. And I knew that he was protecting me just as he protected you and everybody else if you love him and your neighbor. That's the main thing, and I do that.
Oh, good for you, and God bless. Now, you stated mind-altering drugs. What type of drugs were they giving you, like trying to give you heroin?
The way they do it is this. They start you out with a light medication. When I refused to take it, they said that they would shoot it to me in my buttocks. So I took it orally until I found out a way to get around taking it. They started out with 150 milligrams of a drug called Elavil. Now, they usually start you out on that, keep you on that a couple of weeks, and then they come in with the Haldol and they come in with the stronger drugs until you lose your ability. You lose your ability to make a decision. And therefore, you become a willing captive to what that they're doing. Your body becomes dependent upon those drugs, and then you're in their hands forever.
Okay, so they were trying to get you drug dependent so you can be under their control and under their rule of thumb.
No question about it. No question whatsoever about it. Because this is the way that the government operated during those times. I remember there was a young lady who had been the secretary for Bill of Salestis. She wanted to give some information. I believe that her first name was Nancy, I remember. But anyway, she wanted to give testimony concerning Bill of Salestis' scandal, and she was put in the hospital in Washington, D.C. And finally, they got a lawyer and forced to release her, but they tried to declare her insane, too. That's the method of all fascist governments. That's the method that they use. And when you're in prison as a black man, you are under fascism.
Well, it seems to be the same way in the industry system. Whenever you speak against the government, like Roseanne Barr and Roseanne O'Donnell and a few other people when they spoke about 9/11, it seems like they were tried and executed within the media. Do you think the media is controlled by the government, or do you think the government is controlled by the media and the owners of the media?
No, the media is controlled by the government. As a matter of fact, the media is the government, because wherever you have the power of the print, the power of publications, the power of telecommunication, which is right now in the hands in less than a dozen people across the world, that power is right now, as I say, in the hands of a very few people, and they try to direct the American people's mind in the direction that they want them to go. And they have been very successful at it, especially during the last few days where they were in memory of President Kennedy's assassination. Anyone who disagreed with the Warren Commission report was not given mass media attention, as were those who were called proponents of Oswald alone.
Right. Well, Mr. Bugliosi's book, even though I've met him personally, and he's a great person, great, wonderful person, but his book is basically based on the Warren Commission's reports and the Warren Commission's findings and their investigations. And me personally, I don't believe the Warren Commission, nor do I believe the 9/11 Commission or any of the commissions that have been put out to find any facts of truth, period, whether it was the Waco or the Oklahoma bombing. What do you feel about those incidents like Ruby Ridge, Oklahoma bombing, and Waco?
Well, those particular incidents, I think, were designed to put fear in the people, to put that all power and fear into the people. It was a massive overreach by the government, and I believe that it was intended to instill fear, and that's what the government works on. It works basically on fear and falsehood propaganda. So now, but we have to go beyond that. We can't be nimby-pimby, and we can't be placid about these things. We have to stand up as Americans, and we have to stand up. See, we have young men over in the foreign countries, and they're dying. Their blood is being spilled in order to protect and give us the rights that we do have at this very moment. Now, if we cannot ourselves help them protect us from the oncoming fascism and the tyrannies government, then we don't deserve to be a free people after all.
Right. And I have a question from Mike in Pennsylvania, and he wants to know if you've ever tried to reach out to the Kennedy family to express your concerns about the JFK death.
Yes, I did. Yes, while Ted Kennedy was alive, I tried to reach out to him. I tried to reach out to Carolyn Kennedy. As a matter of fact, I arranged for her to have a copy of my book, The Echo from Dealey Plaza. But it seems like they did not want to get involved whatsoever with the Kennedy matter. But here lately, there's one nephew, I believe, of President Kennedy, who is now voicing a fact that he has second thoughts as to whether or not Oswald was the lone gunman or not. He is leaning towards the conspiracy side. I understand from some of the internet conversations and the writings that I have seen.
Oh, well, I hope he's successful in his endeavors to get people to wake up. I know we're trying very, very hard, people like you and I and this radio program, to get people to understand what's really going on out there. Do you think that they were responsible for killing Junior? I mean, this plane crash.
No, I don't. That's just my personal opinion. I have no evidence whatsoever to connect anyone with the death of Junior.
Okay. Do you have any other Secret Service agents that have come to your side in the matter and seen what has happened to you, and have they voiced their opinions about what's happened to you?
Yes, there have been a few who wanted to come forth, but after seeing what happened to me, they had second thoughts on it. They had second thoughts, but I never had second thoughts on it, because I know that this is my duty as an American citizen, as a former agent of the United States Secret Service, and to the Kennedy family and to John Kennedy himself, who gave me such a great honor as being the first African-American on the White House detail assigned in Washington, D.C. And that's something that no one can ever take away from me. And I'll always remember him as a gentleman that he was, and as the proponent of righteousness and justice for all people across the United States and in foreign countries.
Great. I've got a caller on the line from New Mexico. His name is John, and he's from New Mexico. John, go ahead.
Hey, I have to tell you, I like your station and everything, but I don't believe this guy. I think this guy is, I think he was committable.
What's what?
He says he believes you were committable.
Committable? Is he saying that he thought that I was crazy or what?
That's what he's trying to say.
Oh, well, then he will have to call me and Don Adams, the FBI agent who just came out with the book. He would have to say he's crazy, too, because Don Adams on this same Miltier case was the investigator, FBI investigator on the case. He said that his reports were distorted, dates were changed, and he didn't recognize anything that he had submitted to the FBI. Now, I said the same thing, that dates and things were changed on reports. Have you read Don Adams' book? Why don't you read that? Also read my book, Jackal from Dealey Plaza. You'll see that they said the same thing. There were so many things done. Now, I would like for your caller to give me any reason whatsoever for him to come to that opinion during the conversation. If he can do that, I would appreciate it.
Let's let him speak.
I don't deny that.
You don't buy what? What is it you don't buy?
I'm sorry?
What is it that you don't buy? I'm trying to wait to see what you don't buy.
I just don't understand you. You're not articulating what it is that you're trying to say. And to be completely honest with you, I don't believe that you were a Secret Service agent. That's what I'm saying.
Oh, well, then I can't carry the conversation any further than that. You're letting me know right away that you have no inkling of what you're talking about and that you're trying to generate a distraction from the American people, and I'm not going to buy that.
Yeah, I concur with you. John, thanks for calling in. I concur with you, Mr. Bolden. This person is just here to derail the show, of course. When you have shows like this, of course, there is always going to be people that are trying to defend the other side.
Always. Yeah, I've had them to call in and tell me I better not be caught outside, so I told them where I hang out and what time I would be there.
Right.
He never showed up, though.
Of course not. I get people like that all the time. You know, they tell me, well, you better watch out. So I give them my address, and I'm like, show up, please. You know, make my day. It's unfortunate that we do have people out there that are like that. And, you know, they tend to derail people that are honest and truthful. And it just tells me that these people have something to cover up.
Well, people like that we can tolerate, but the ones, the detractors that are most dangerous are your PhDs and your LLBs who are writing books fully knowing that all that they're doing is hoodwinking the American people and trying to protect their own popularity and to distract the people from what the real truth are. Those are the dangerous people, the so-called educated among us, that are writing all these books that are actually obfuscating the truth.
Well, I would not call them educated. I would call them systemized.
Yes, that's right.
They're not educated. They're systemized. And these are the people that you cannot... you cannot release because their conditioning has gone so far and so deep to where their own mind can't even reclaim itself.
Right. Well, that was a great general, and I'll repeat so far as my stance is concerned and let everyone know that can hear my voice. When I say I have just begun to fight, the fight is a long way from over. This is just 50 years. And we're going to be in this thing all the way. And I'm going to train my grandchildren, and I'm going to train as many people that I know in order to continue this fight to get to the bottom of it. People say, well, what difference does it make? It make a lot of difference whether they be free or enslaved.
I'm right there with you, sir. I am right there with you. It's all about... fighting for this country. Even though I'm not a native born of this country, I will always fight. I took the oath to defend this Constitution from enemies foreign and domestic, and by God, I will continue to keep that oath. I'd like to thank you, sir, for joining us on our show. For you people out there listening, do not forget to look up his book. It's called The Echo from Dealey Plaza. Or you can go to echofromdaleyplaza.net. Thanks to our guest, Mr. Bolden. Next week, my guest will be the author of The General's Son, Miko Peled. He will be joining us to talk about the atrocities being committed on to the Palestinian people by the Israelis and the Zionists of Israel that really don't belong there. But anyways, this is Rock Cash. Thanks to Don Newsom and the BBS Radio Network, and we'll see you next week.
One bright sunny morning in the shadow of the steeple by the relief office, I saw my people, and they stood there hungry, and I stood there wondering if this land was made for you and me. This land is your land, this land is my land, from California to the New York Island, redwood forest to the Gulf Stream waters. Yeah, this land is made for you and me.